I just felt that small to medium-sized businesses were at a disadvantage. And I thought there was an opportunity for a marketing resource aimed specifically at small to medium-sized businesses and startups that could help them leverage the power of online engagement. We did due diligence and couldn't find a marketing agency that took that kind of approach. So, January 2008, I resigned my comfortable corporate job with all its trappings like international travel and company BMW and expense accounts and all that sort of stuff. And we launched 2008, which, as you'll recall, was probably not the best time to start a marketing agency, any business. Not the best business decision I've ever made, but with not a small amount of luck and the support of fantastic clients, we weathered the storm of the post-boom recession. Years later, here we are. We've grown to 19 people in 9 countries, helped over 400 clients, marketing strategies, branding, design, websites. Most importantly, get it from a behavioral science aspect. So what our differentiation, if you like, is that we apply behavioral science thinking into a lot of the strategic and tactical execution to focus on the emotional resonance of our messaging to optimize to our ideal customer profile, our ICP. And that's us.
Interesting.
But I am the world's biggest super fan.
You're like a super fan.
Welcome to the Business Superfans Podcast. We will discuss how establishing business superfans from customers, employees, and business partners can elevate your success exponentially. Learn why these advocates are a key factor to achieving excellence in the world of commerce. We discuss the invaluable insights of business owners who have successfully implemented the strategies in the book to build their own team of devoted superfans. Gain insightful knowledge from the experts who create applications to help you create passionate superfans. This is the Business Superfans Podcast. With your host, Freddie D.
Freddie!
Hey, superfans, superstar, Freddie D here. In this episode, number 107, we're joined by G. Ranashina, a true marketing veteran whose journey started way back in the era of dial-up internet and those iconic AOL CDs. Today, G is the CEO of Kexino, an award-winning marketing agency and behavioral science practice that's helped over 400 startups and small businesses in more than 20 countries build awareness, earn trust, and most importantly, drive sales. He's not just a practitioner, he's a pro. G is a fellow of the Chartered Institute of Marketing and a visiting clinical professor of 2 business schools, bringing a powerful blend of real-world experience and the academic insight to the table. In our conversation, G unpacks why so much of today's marketing completely misses the mark, why strategy doesn't always come from tactics, and how understanding buyer behavior has never been more critical, especially in an AI world. If you're ready for a fresh, no-nonsense take on what it really takes to move the marketing needle, this one's for you. Let's dive in. Hey, Freddie D here with another episode of the Business Superfans Podcast Show. We're super excited to have G with Kexino joining us today. Welcome, G.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I do appreciate it. Delighted to be invited.
So we're excited to have you, and we had a great chat before we started recording, and it kind of surprised you that I was originally from France. It was a great conversation beforehand. Let's continue that conversation here while we're recording. And tell me a little bit about, how did this Kexino name come about?
Name actually came about from, very simply, we knew right at the beginning when we started the agency that we were going to be multicultural and international. So we need a name that was short. One of us wanted an X because it's memorable and allows a certain amount of artistic interpretation when we start looking at design cues and distinctive brand assets and that sort of thing. And we also wanted to find something that didn't mean your mother is a table in Swahili or something, right? Something that was totally abstract. So after lots of humming and ah, lots of suggestions didn't hit the spot. We settled on Kixina. Oh, obviously, we had to, one of the other criteria was we needed to find a domain that was available.
In today's world, that's really important and challenging.
That's really important. And we wanted a .com because, you know, .com's where it's at, isn't it, at the end of the day? If you're settling for a non-TLD that's not a .com, then you wish you had a .com.
Yeah, I totally agree. I remember years ago, I would spend hours on a marker board trying to come up with names for companies that I've owned in the past. I came up with phonetic spelling and a multitude of different tricks and approaches. Sometimes it would take more than just hours. It would take a few days because then you'd look at it, it still wasn't right. Regrettably, I didn't keep some of those domain names. They're probably worth some money today, but going backwards. So tell us a little bit about your backstory. How did you get started in marketing? I mean, before we started recording, we talked about the good old AOL days for dial-up internet. You and I go back a long way in this space.
I actually started in production to be an advertising photographer way back in the days of film. This was before digital image capture. I was primarily a studio photographer using 4x5 and 8x10 sheet film cameras. That's where I started. After some time, we were pretty successful. We, at the end, there were about four of us, and we were turning over, you know, eight-figure revenue. I mean, it was pretty good for a while. Then I got drafted into getting involved with digital image capture, right at the very bleeding edge, working with some very innovative and forward-thinking organizations who were very knowledgeable but didn't have the photographic chops to actually understand some important criteria from a photography aspect would influence a buying decision from their products. So I was more like an advisor consultant for those guys, which we did for a while. Then I made another jump to a distribution company, which, as well as selling these professional grade digital image capture systems, which in the day you'd be looking at about 50 grand just for the digital back, which slotted onto your conventional camera. And this was in the days when 50 grand was a lot of money.
Sure. But it's,
some of the other products in this company's portfolio was a software product, which was, again, pretty innovative. There wasn't really something to compare it with. And so it got me into software from the pre-media printing and publishing areas. So once an image had been captured, either with film or digitally, to understand the process of what happened to that image up until it got to print, but then became other types of media channels, which then got me to the point where I got headhunted to be CMO of a software company, which I did for 7 years. Clients were people like Airbus, Marvel, IKEA, some pretty big names. After that, we grew the company pretty well. The business was in the right place at the right time for growth. It still was a small company, so I realized I was treading water for the last year or two while I was there. So I needed to make a change as a CMO. You're always entertaining marketing agencies to give pitches for the contract. But I was shocked that no matter who we got in, the agencies were very interested in all the tactical stuff, all the execution-based stuff, right? You know, websites, videos, events, brochures, all that stuff. But they weren't really looking very deeply from a strategic standpoint about how to align the needs of the marketing department to fulfill the needs of the business as a whole. They weren't taking any real fiduciary responsibility over what they were putting together. So they'd come up with these fantastical plans, and if they didn't hit the target, they'd say, okay, fair enough, let's wipe the whiteboard down and start again. I thought that was a bit mad, really. It's a bit mental. As you'll remember, there was a number of elements are coming together which sort of formed like a perfect storm, right? Broadband internet became affordable for non-techies, yep. civilians, yep. if you like. The iPhone had just come out, heralding what smartphones ended up doing for us. And we were just starting to leverage the power of the internet to influence our day-to-day lives. It wasn't something that was locked away in a lab somewhere. The thing is that at the time, the businesses that were taking advantage of what the internet could be were obviously the big guys with the deeper pockets and seemingly endless resources.
Yeah, I mean, I remember doing online banking in the 90s. Before the late 90s, I was in charge of global sales and marketing for a software company in Arizona. I redid their web page because it was horrible in Microsoft Front Page. And that started a side gig for me because the reseller said, hey, who did the website? I said, I did. And it got me a little side gig of doing some websites for the distributors. Back then, it was still cowboy days, for lack of a better way of wording it, but an accurate way. Nobody was really leveraging it to where you're talking about before, of really not just marketing pieces, but putting it together as a complete strategy for a business.
I just felt that small to medium-sized businesses were at a disadvantage. And I thought there was an opportunity for a marketing resource aimed specifically at small to medium-sized businesses and startups that could help them leverage the power of online engagement. We did due diligence and couldn't find a marketing agency that took that kind of approach. So, January 2008, I resigned my comfortable corporate job with all its trappings, like international travel and company BMW and expense accounts and all that sort of stuff. And we launched 2008, which, as you'll recall, was probably not the best time to start a marketing agency, any business. Not the best business decision I've ever made, but with not a small amount of luck and the support of fantastic clients, we weathered the storm of the post-boom recession. Years later, here we are. We've grown to 19 people in 9 countries, helped over 400 clients. Marketing strategies, branding, design, websites. Most importantly, get it from a behavioral science aspect. So what our differentiation, if you like, is that we apply behavioral science thinking into a lot of the strategic and tactical execution to focus on the emotional resonance of our messaging to optimize to our ideal customer profile, our ICP. And that's us.
Interesting story. You know, what a broad background that you bring to the equation from all the different roles that you've participated in to where you are today. You're really hitting a point that when leveraging behavioral science into marketing, people buy emotionally, but they justify it logically. What you're doing with the messaging is helping pull people in. The fact that you started in 2008 and had clients that believed in you and came on board, those are what I would call super fans, diehard business advocates that champion your brand and promote it everywhere. Super fans is a cooler name than brand advocates. And that's what carried you through, propelled you to the next level. Look at where you are 17 years later.
I think it's an easier narrative to accept, especially if you're a business owner, a founder, CEO type business owner. Sweeping generalization here, but we have to make sweeping generalizations to make sense of anything. Many founder CEOs have an inherent, I don't know if distrust is the right word, but certainly they are wary of marketing as a core competency for use within the business because of what they kind of heard of marketing. Maybe they've had their fingers burnt in the past. But also, as marketers, we often don't do ourselves favors. We choose to articulate what we do and how we're effective by using words and phrases which don't really align with people who are not within the marketing world. Marketing 101 is know your audience and adapt your message accordingly. But I don't think we do that very well, because to simplify things to the point where we believe the magic, the skill, competence of our industry is obfuscated to people who are not working within that industry. So we choose to complicate, befuddle, and I don't think that does anybody any good.
I can relate. One of the things I did when I took the manufacturing product, I've used a little bit of a different approach. And that was back then, late 90s, there was no real internet online stuff. So it was a lot of magazines. So I went out and flew out to editors that were looking for content for their publications and would demonstrate and talk about how this technology, I still have the brochures and stuff of the product, but we coined the term machining intelligence back in the late 90s. It was a relational database for milling machines and wire EDMs in the manufacturing space. We got these editors to start writing articles on how this type of technology was transformative. And so I ended up getting a third party that was in the space targeting their audience to write an article, which gave me credibility and gave our product credibility. And that's how I grew that particular product. And to bring that up because of the things you're talking about. Yes, you're absolutely correct. We had talked to different marketing agencies and none of them were really understanding what we were trying to do. I came up with an idea talking to some people, and I'm still friends with one of the marketing guys that we collaborated on. We came up with the machine intelligence name and said, hey, start going to publications and start getting them to endorse the product. And that completely changed the game because we were talking to the audience through a third party that was giving us credibility.
It was contact marketing before they had a name for it.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very basic, solid, foundational channel of communication. It's always better to have other people extolling the virtues of your brand than it is for you. Whether that's customers, the industry, you're automatically more likely to trust someone who's perceived as being unbiased.
Right.
Well, we don't believe what brands tell us anymore.
Right.
I don't think we ever did. In the old days, we didn't have enough information to debase some of these claims. And now we do. And I think that's another reason why so many businesses are floundering at the moment, because they don't have any more tools in their box and they don't know how to attract and convey the right kind of information tailored to the particular target or buyer in a way that comes across as being real, authentic, genuine, truly informational, educational, maybe even entertaining along the way, who knows, but something that cuts through. And that's the essential part. That's what so much of marketing is missing today. The memorability, right. The ability for it to be remembered.
Yep.
What we've done over the last 20 years, which is accelerated over the last 10, 15 years, is we've used technology and software to scale and automate the production of our marketing. Along the way, we've exorcised much of the creativity of the campaigns out of it to the point where we've got something efficient, low cost, but ineffective. If you look at this year, globally, the marketing and advertising industry is set to spend $1.6 trillion, the highest ever. We're spending more and more on marketing and advertising and getting lower and lower results, even though we've got all this marketing technology and tags, and customer audience profiles and AI and goodness knows whatever else we've got done. So how can that be? The reason is because the emotional component of any memorable message is either hidden or not there at all. Look at your own experience. If you look at two pieces of marketing from two different businesses who are competitors, especially in the online space, but not solely digital. If you cover up the logo of each one, the actual content could be interchangeable between those two brands.
I would totally agree.
Totally. And that's because if you're a buyer and you're looking for distinctiveness and some kind of differentiation so you can remember the particular brand at the point of purchase, don't forget, 99% of the messaging you see is going to people that aren't ready to buy at that exact moment in time that they're seeing your messaging, right? So we have to rely on being remarkable. Now, by remarkable, I don't mean wow, remarkable. In literal sense, to be remarked upon, to create a narrative in the brain of the potential buyer so that when they are in markets looking to buy, we are one of that limited selection of vendors they think of when they're looking to buy, which is all marketing can ever do.
Sure, yep.
So you can think of it as an SEO for your brain.
Yep.
Okay? It's just trying to put that in the head of the potential buyer.
Well, let me go further than that. And that's where I talk about the creation of superfans, because having been both in sales and marketing for decades, the transaction and the sale really happen after the paperwork, because that's really the experience. You know, marketing is to attract and get the person in there. But once they're in, that's when they really become a customer. The sale is all the back end stuff, the onboarding, the utilization of the product or service to software, and really transforming. I really believe that's what propelled my success on a global scale. My whole ecosystem of customers, contractors, suppliers, distributors, and complementary businesses were what I call fans. They were promoting me. They were talking me up. And when you get that momentum going, that's how you really differentiate yourself. In today's world, it's blending back old school ways of good old word of mouth. Today, when we go to a restaurant, we pull up our smartphones, look at the reviews, what are people saying about it? That's how it's all done today. Beyond what you guys are doing to target the ideal audience, you got to get that audience to champion you to help propel it to the next level.
You know, which I think only really happens after they've had an experience with your brand.
Correct.
Right? Because then they can talk.
Right.
Then they can talk from a position of experience.
Yep.
Because what you're talking about is branding, right? Branding is, I think this is Jeff Bezos who said, branding is what people say when you're not in the room.
Right.
Right. Branding is very important, especially industries where competitors are very closely aligned and it's difficult to separate the features, advantages, and benefits of one vendor from another. And what scores above anything else is perception of brand. It helps elevate a business away from having to differentiate by a metric that the customer can understand outside of what the competition are doing, which often is price-based.
Right.
And as we know, once you start differentiating yourself on price, that's only going one direction. And that's a race that you do not want to win.
Yeah, because when I was selling manufacturing software and other technologies that I sold, I would get referred by a super fan to somebody else, and pricing was no longer part of the conversation. They'd say, Jack says I need to get this. What's it cost? How fast can you get it here? That was the end of the deal. That was it. The transaction was done because of that.
The testimonials, the testimonial has spoken for them. The uncertainty of navigating through an industry where you may not be familiar with the key players has been removed because you've been able to get to a point of reference through a referral and having that trust. Because before people buy from you, they need to know of you.
Right.
So by having that reputation, by having that referral, it's put you to the top of the list. Now, it's up to you to stay at the top of the list.
It's another conversation.
Because you can quite easily fall off that pedestal. But, you know, I would say attention's not the issue. I don't think attention's the issue. It's easy to make a big noise and get eyeballs. That's not the problem. The problem is coming up with a piece of communication that informs, entertains, educates, whatever it needs to do, with a message that can then inspire action. And you need to have those three elements in place for any marketing to be what we'd call effective. And much of it isn't.
Restate those three things, please.
That grabs the attention.
Restate for our listeners.
Capturing somebody's attention. The communication, the actual message of the reason why you're attracting their attention, and then the action you want them to take as a result. Unless those three elements are spelled out very, very clearly, the chances of that particular piece of marketing being very effective is going to be very low. Much of what we see with marketing today is taking one, possibly two, but not three of those elements together. I said attention's easy, okay? Getting eyeballs is easy. But saying something that is memorable, has an emotional as well as a logical, pragmatic component to it, to be able to form those memory structures in the brain, is far too rare. Look at the way the human mind works is reliant upon emotion to secure strong memory structures. Look at any memorable event in your life.
It's snapshots. Okay? I look at it as I call it snapshots. You got snapshots of things that you happen in memories.
And all of those memories, I'd wager, the strongest memories that you've had in your life thus far have been underpinned by an emotional reaction. Happiness, maybe sadness, maybe anger, maybe grief, maybe whatever. It's underpinned by a very strong emotion. Look how sometimes you can be walking down the street or in a strange place and you suddenly get a smell which instantly transforms you back 10, 20, 50 years in the past. It evokes a very strong emotional reaction, right? Because that's how memory structures are formed. Yes, you need information. You need pragmatism, logic, and rationality. But it's nothing without having an emotional reaction to underpin all of that. Otherwise, it is easily forgotten. And we're not doing that anymore. And this is the reason why so much of our marketing is failing to hit its target. And we're blaming the tools rather than the people who simply aren't doing their jobs.
I would agree with that.
And the reason why they're not doing their jobs is because they don't know how to do their jobs.
Right.
Because people conflate marketing with promotion. They think marketing is ads and videos and podcasts and websites and stress balls and events and brochures, right? Which is all tactical. It's all promotional stuff. Nobody's thinking about customer research and segmentation, targeting, positioning. And all of the stuff that happens, the 9/10 of the iceberg that are under the waterline, that normal people don't see as an output from marketing. Nor would they.
No,
there's no reason for them to see it.
Let me share something that contributes to that. In 2009, I was helping a bathroom remodeler in Chicago with digital marketing and sales. I never really sold construction before, but I owned apartment buildings in the past. I ended up getting a referral for a guy looking to get his kitchen remodeled. I'm bringing this up because it's a story, and I created a vision for him of what his place would look like. And we talked about the kitchen, and then we start talking, well, if we do this, this is how the living room's going to look. And if you're going to do this, it's going to be the bathroom, and this is going to be the bedroom. And all of a sudden, the thing that got him excited was he was looking at a whole different place. I ended up selling a $140,000 remodeling project. I know how to sell, but the point was, I didn't sell. I got a story in his head, which is exactly what you're really talking about, is through digital marketing. I created a vision where he visualized something himself and he ended up buying. I wasn't selling anymore. What you're doing is similar. You're getting somebody to buy because they resonate with it emotionally.
What you're doing is painting the picture where they have to fill in the dots themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, it's your idea anymore, it's their idea.
So let's talk about how you manage your team and all the different countries that you're in. How do you work with all the multicultural challenges, beliefs, languages, and all that stuff?
The cultures aren't actually very different. We're 19 people in 9 countries. 9 of us are in the US. The rest are in Europe, Japan, and I have 2 people in Australia. And we've been in a distributed working environment since day one. In 2008, it was a pretty bold move, and there weren't many agencies setting themselves up in a remote working environment at the time. It was quite daring, and we had to find our way in terms of how best to communicate and also build culturally within the organization, since you don't have those water cooler moments when you're 20,000 miles away from each other. One thing we do is yearly kickoff meetings to on cultural aspect of the organization to get a bit crazy with people you're working with every day, but you don't see in real life. It's not for everyone. And we've tried very hard to onboard certain people where this is something that they embrace. The level of self-discipline required is very strong. And to be effective in the role, you have to have an entrepreneurial mindset about how you do your work every day. We tried lots of things. There was one particular person I really wanted to work with. She was fantastic. Adapting this new way of working was totally alien to it. One of the guys suggested a video chat open the entire organization, bearing in mind that different people are working different hours, and it would be like that for a week. The video chat was on. You saw your peers working or getting up, getting coffee, whatever, as a proxy for being in a room together. And I think it helped her, but ultimately it just wasn't enough for her. Unfortunately, she left. But it's not for everyone. It also offers a certain amount of freedom, especially when we've got a couple of software developers who they're both in the US, don't work conventional US working hours. They do some crazy working hours, but I don't care, right? We work in an agile methodology on sprints. We have deadlines and scopes.
You do what you got to do to get to where you got to get to.
And as long as it's done when we say it's going to be done, I don't care how we get there.
Yep.
You want to start work at 4 in the morning and finish at 3, go for it. You want to start at 3 in the afternoon and finish at 4 in the morning, go for it. I don't care.
Right.
It doesn't really matter.
That's the difference between a good leader and a bad leader. A good leader really believes in their team and empowers their team, versus someone that dictates and says, no, these are the hours, this is what you got to do, and this is how you get a report. you're not leveraging your people that well. What you're doing is really leveraging people because it's really about the outcome.
But getting out of their way, isn't it?
Yep.
Letting them do what they need to do and taking away anything that gets in their way.
Yep. That's a leader.
That's what my job is, get them out of the way. We've had very, very low staff churn. In 17 years, I think we lost two in 17 years. These are people who I've known, apart from three, even before we started the agency. So these are people who I would trust with my business life. We had a working relationship at a certain point in time. That's carried over. That's not the case for everyone, of course. But you very quickly know whether somebody's going to be a good fit or not by working on a project. The environment and the remote working, yeah, it takes some getting used to. But in terms of work ethic, attention to detail and communication and dealing with clients, there's no book to read.
Right.
There's no training course to take.
Correct.
Okay? This is something that is implicit within the human being. If you haven't got it, then go off and flip burgers or follow your dream or do whatever you need to do. Those sorts of things can't be taught. I don't think anybody in a marketing role can be as effective a marketer as they could otherwise be if they've never worked in sales. I don't think you can do a good enough job unless you've worked in sales.
They're intertwined.
Now,
they're really intertwined.
You know, even working behind a bar or in a clothes store, right? Doesn't matter. But I think until you can actually understand how the way you speak and present things can influence the outcome of a situation, I don't think you can really apply the level of engagement that you could have otherwise applied potentially in a marketing environment. Don't think we're done.
I agree with that. So as we come close to the end here, how can people find you?
Best place to find me, to be honest, is LinkedIn. That's where I spend most of my time. There's only one G Ranasinghe on LinkedIn, would you believe? Amazingly. So it's quite easy to find me. I post two or three times a week, 1-minute videos about the sorts of things that we've been talking about today, or things that have wound me up that week or got me rattled, whatever. LinkedIn is probably the best way to get hold of me. Otherwise, the agency, Kexino, is KEXINO.com. Simple as that.
Yep, absolutely.
Whatever.
I have all the information.
Right.
Sure. So, gee, it's been a pleasure having you on the Business Superfans podcast. Great conversation. I can tell we could probably spend hours on this subject because we both have a strong background in it, and that makes it fun and engaging. Thank you so much for your time. We look forward to having you on the show down the road.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Cheers.
Hey, superfans, superstar, Freddie D here. Before we wrap, here's your 3A playbook power move to attract the ideal clients, turn them into advocates, and accelerate your business success. Here's a top insight from today's episode. Your marketing doesn't need more tech. It needs more emotion, because only emotional renaissance makes your message unforgettable and action inspired. So here's your business growth action step. Audit your last 5 marketing messages and rewrite each one to stir a specific emotion that your ideal clients feels before they buy. If today's conversation sparked an idea for you, or you know of a fellow business leader who could benefit, share it with them. Support the show with a donation and grab the full breakdown in the show notes. Let's accelerate together and start creating business superfans who champion your brand.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Business Superfans podcast. If you found today's conversation valuable, don't forget to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share this episode with someone who could use these powerful insights to level up their business. Remember, creating business superfans isn't just about your customers. It's about fostering genuine, impactful connections across your entire business ecosystem. When you invest in those relationships, success doesn't just happen, it accelerates. Until next time, I'm your host, Freddie D. Let's keep building superfans, creating unstoppable momentum, and driving your business toward extraordinary success. See you in the next episode.
We hope you took away some useful knowledge from today's episode of the Business Superfans Podcast. The path to success relies on taking action. So go over to BusinessSuperfans.com and get your hands on the book if you haven't already. Join the Accelerator community and take that first step in generating a team of passionate supporters for your business. Join us on the next episode as we continue guiding you on your journey to achieve flourishing success in business.